Welcome to Riff Talk on RiffManiaRadio.com. A place for new music, upcoming artists, and specialized interviews.
Okay, today we're talking with my good friend Jeff DeBerry. I understand today you've been working on a new song, Jeff. Do you want to talk at all about that?
How you doing, Jason? Yeah, well, I mean, I'm working on a new, I've actually released a new song already called Bite the Bullet, and this song I'm working on now is called The Candle, and it's a ballad, it's a song dedicated to all the people that have died and perished, from 9/11 through all of the shootings and what happened in Boston. And stuff like that. It's really emotional. It's I've been really emotional, you know, seeing it. I've been trying to put the vocal tracks down, and I have to keep stopping because it's very when I'm done with, when I'm finished with the song and you hear it, you'll know why.
Okay, well, can't wait to hear that one. Now, of course, a lot has happened since we last did this about a month ago. What I want to talk about first, of course. Being the huge Iron Maiden fan you are, since we last talked, the original drummer Clive Burr passed away. He'd been suffering for a number of years with MS. I know you were a bit of a fan of it. You want to talk a little bit about that?
Well, I mean, I've always been a fan of Iron Maiden, you know, and Clive Burr was, I always thought he was a great drummer. And when I heard of him, I knew that he had multiple sclerosis, you know, for a long time. And when I heard of him passing, it upset me, you know. But you know, people that have multiple sclerosis eventually, you know, pass away. And Clive, I never knew him, you know, personally or anything. I just, you know, he was on the first couple albums, and he was just a great drummer. You know, it's a sad loss. You know, it's another loss of, you know, another great talent. Along with so many others in the past.
Yeah, and you know, of course, like you're saying, you know, he played on, you know, those first two main albums. I think people would be surprised to find out he actually also, the last thing he did with the band was the Number of a Beast album, which was the first to feature, you know, Bruce Dickinson. And so a lot of, you know, even though he played on those first three albums, a lot of people think, you know, a mistake, but Nico McBrain's been with the band for, you know, forever, but it's actually Clive Burr that was the original guy. And talk about when you first got into Maiden, Jeff. I mean, if you look back, especially on those first two Maiden albums, what was it about his drumming and just the band in general that kind of, you know, really made you take notice of him?
Well, Iron Maiden was, when the first time I ever heard Iron Maiden was probably back in 1981. MTV first came out and they actually used to play music.
And, yeah, I remember that.
They used to show those couple of videos by Iron Maiden. I think one was Rothschild, and the other one was the song Iron Maiden, where Eddie comes out and stuff. And I always thought they were great. The only thing I didn't really become a fan immediately, because I just didn't care. I mean, not that Paul DeYoung was a bad singer or anything like that. He's actually a really good singer. His vocal style just to me didn't seem to fit with the kind of music that they were playing. You know, and a couple of friends of mine, we all agreed on it. You know, we said, you know, if they had a different singer, they'd be a really great band. You know, and then when they came out with the album Number of the Beast and they debuted the first single off that album, which was Run to the Hills, and I seen the video with Bruce Dickinson, and I was like, that's it, that's the guy, they got it now, you know. And of course Clive Burr was a drummer. I mean, Nico McBrain and Clive Burr really are very similar in their style of playing. You know, they use a single bass drum, and when I listen to Iron Maiden, I can tell Clive Burr from Nico McBrain. But their styles are very similar. You know, Iron Maiden, Steve Harris and the guys kept with the, you know, they knew what they wanted when they found Nico McBrain. But Clive was a great drummer. I mean, the first time I had ever seen Iron Maiden, I thought the band was great. especially Steve Harris on the bass, you know, the dual leads and the hard rock and drum. And it was something different. It was different than most of the stuff that was out there at the time, you know. A lot of the, you know, this was 1981, so this is really before, like, you know, the glam era, you know, took off. You know, it was still the transitioning from the 70s to the 80s. And Iron Maiden was, it was new, they were fresh, they were new. And I always say that, you know, Iron Maiden, in my opinion, is probably the greatest heavy metal band, you know, that there is. You know, I mean, a lot of heavy metal, because before Iron Maiden, you had bands like Judas Priest and, you know, stuff like that. Iron Maiden took, you know, stuff like what Priest was doing and just took it to the next level, you know. And it's that I've always been a fan. My wife and I both are huge, huge Iron Maiden fans. I love Iron Maiden, and it was really sad, you know, to hear the passing of Clive Burr.
Yeah, and you know, like we're saying, if you go back to those first two albums, you know, I almost, you know, there's obviously two different Maidens. Like you're saying, the one of Paul Di'Anno, it almost sounds like a different band. Obviously, you know, it's a different singer, but I mean, they almost were more of a punk band and a metal band, but you could hear, you know, they had a bit of a metal influence. And I think, like you said, Bruce Dickinson, he really took them to the next level. And it's an amazing story when you figure, you know, the replacement singer actually, you know, it was more popular than the original guy. And I think for anybody who goes and even listens to Paul Di'Anno's solo stuff, you'll see that, you know, it was the right decision for both camps. You know, that was more of his sound. And I think it's amazing when you consider Steve Harris. You know, he's a guy that's he's the main songwriter, and he really had a vision for, you know, where he took the band, and they're still around today. You know, and being a Maiden fan, I was curious, you know, if you look at all their album covers, you know, it's pretty much, you know, Eddie on the cover of everything. How much of an influence was that on, you know, you becoming a Maiden fan, you know, the imagery and all of our album artwork?
Well, the album cover really had nothing to do with me becoming a fan of Iron Maiden. They're just great musicians. I mean, yeah. They're just an awesome, they're all so talented, you know, and the very first Iron Maiden album that I ever owned was Number of the Beast. When I seen that video and heard the song Run to the Hills, I think it was the very next day I ran out and bought the album. You know, when I seen the album covers, I was like, well, it's cool, you know, with Eddie and stuff. I mean, all their album covers are very, you know, they're unique. And you know an Iron Maiden album when you see an Iron Maiden album, because they always have Eddie on the front cover. They don't, you know, they'll usually have the band maybe on the back or something like that, but I don't think there's an Iron Maiden album out there that actually has a picture of the band itself on the front cover. It's always Eddie, and the artwork is tremendous. It's really cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, you know, not taking anything away from musicianship, but you know, I remember myself as a kid and hearing so many other people saying, you know, like they see an Iron Maiden cover, and you know, when they seen it for the first time, had no idea who the band was. But I think even I've heard Scott Ian of Anthrax saying the same type of thing. I saw that picture of that first Iron Maiden album. I didn't know who the hell they were, but man, that album cover looked cool and made me want to check it out. And then I go and buy it. I turn on the, you know, I check out the music, and you know, I was even more inspired. You know, so you know, you know, I think it's just amazing the way they've been able to combine their music and their art, and you know, they're still around doing it today.
Like I said, yeah, I mean, Maiden to me is the best. I mean, I don't know if anybody else feels that way, but that's my opinion. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, Iron Maiden is the best. I mean, and all others, you know, falling behind them, because they started that style of music. You know, they took it to that level. You know, then you get all those other bands that came on after them, like Queensryche and whatnot. That when I first heard them, they kind of reminded me of Iron Maiden a little bit. But they were, you know, Iron Maiden was a lot faster and just heavier. You know, and I've always been a fan. I'll always be a fan. I've seen them. I've only seen Iron Maiden one time. That was back in 1985 on the Power Slave tour, and that was one of the greatest, best concerts I've ever been to. It was awesome.
And I think
they tour the States, you know, they don't, as of late, they don't really do a lot of dates in the United, here in the States, you know. A lot of them, you know, they're overseas and, like, Brazil and stuff like that, where they're really, really, really huge, you know. And And so that, and plus they don't, I mean, they, where I live now in Columbus, Ohio, they don't come here. You know, they haven't been here. They'll go like to maybe Cleveland or Cincinnati. I mean, they always go to Chicago. It's just too far for me to go for a concert.
Wow. You know, and you know, I know believe it or not, they're semi-retired because, you know, a couple of years ago they were contemplating with doing a farewell tour, but then they ultimately, like a lot of these bands, decided, we're going to still tour and, you know, every couple of years put out like a new album, but we're just not going to, you know, we're going to do select dates, kind of like what you were saying in the U.S. and tour where we're most popular. And I hear they supposedly have a summer tour coming up with Megadeth, I think, and Anthrax supposed to be opening up, so we should... you know, be on the lookout. But what do you think, you know, the last few years, you know, they do these tours where they don't necessarily have a new album out, but they go back and they do, like, different, I think on this last tour they did, like, Somewhere in Time, and they went back and kind of redid that tour for people that weren't around back then to see.
Well, Iron Maiden is the kind of band that they don't need to come out with a new album. I mean, they have so many songs, you know, they could just tour and tour with what they got, you know. They don't, it's not necessary for them to come out with a new album. It's you know, I do have, I'm not sure what the last, I think the last one was The Final Frontier or something like that. I actually do have a copy of that. It was all right. I really didn't care for it all that much. I listened to it all the way through, and I just like skipped over some songs. There's some good stuff on there, but I'm really into their older stuff. You know, and I mean, they could just tour around and just keep playing those songs, and people would still show up to see them because they're Iron Maiden. You know, they're great musicians. You know, Bruce Dickinson, I mean, has not lost a step. You know, I mean, like as opposed to some other lead vocalists, you know, they don't. You know, they get older and they just kind of lose something. Where Bruce Dickinson is actually he's actually better today than he was 25 years ago. You know, and I mean, Bruce, not only is he, you know, a great singer, but I mean, he's just so accomplished in his life. I mean, he's a pilot. He qualified for the Olympics, I believe it was twice at fencing. And, he used to have a radio show not too long ago, but I think that got canceled.
Yeah.
My wife used to listen to it a lot. And I have a great admiration. There's not many people out there that I, you know, look up to or admire. But I mean, if I had to pick one person that I had a lot of admiration from, it would be Bruce Dickinson, you know. And not just him, but the guy, all the guys from Iron Maiden. I mean, they're my favorite heavy metal band. Because I break music down in different categories. I mean, I don't look at bands like Poison and Motley Crue and stuff like that as being like, you know, heavy metal bands. They're more hard rock, you know. And I mean, to me, heavy metal is like Iron Maiden, you know, Metallica, Megadeth, Slayer, and stuff like that. That to me is, you know, Judas Priest, which is old school. But I mean, that to me is like heavy metal. All those other bands, to me, I just... Other people look at them and say, "Yeah, they're metal," but I don't look at them like that. To me, they're hard rock. You know, it's just hard rock, a hard rock band.
Yeah, I mean, I put a guy like Bruce right up there with Ronnie James Dio, you know, and Rob Halford. I mean, he's, you know, these are guys that got, you know, that heavy voice and they can sing the high notes. And like you said, they're, you know, he's still doing it to this day. And interesting thing is, you know, I've listened to some of Bruce's solo stuff, and it's all right. But to be honest, you know, I think he is the voice of Iron Maiden, if you know what I mean. And Steve Harris, you know, he knows what kind of songs to write for Bruce, if you know what I mean. It's almost like they're better together than apart. And so I think it's, you know, great that they're still doing it.
I hope they keep doing it.
Yeah. And, of course, the other sad thing that happened the last couple of days that I want to kind of talk about, Jeff, is the passing of Slayer guitarist Jeff Hanneman. Now, like you, I'm not a huge Slayer fan, but I gotta say, you know, they've been around long enough. They've been doing it since the early '80s, and they're just as big today as ever. And you know, and sadly, while I like you, I don't even own one Slayer album, but I do have a appreciation for what Jeff and you know, Slayer have accomplished over the years. So I did want to talk about his passing for a little bit because the official cause of death, of course, was liver failure. You know, the interesting thing is, while we don't have all the facts, that he hasn't actually been touring with Slayer the last 2 years. I think it's been since 2011 because he got bit by some kind of spider. that caused some kind of infection in him. And early on in, when this first happened, which, you know, almost 2 years ago now, which is interesting, he almost lost his arm because of the infection, but they were able to save it. And he was supposed to have been on the mend, which is kind of when I came home last Thursday from work and was reading passed away. So, you know, on one hand, I wasn't surprised because he's been suffering with this illness and it's been costing him not to tour with the band, but they were getting ready to do a new album. He said, you know, I'm not able to tour with the band, but I still am going to write and I want to see if I can record on the album. So it's a very tragic thing, but I just want to say to, you know, all the Slayer fans and Jeff's fans out there and his family, you know, we really, you know, our condolences go out to everybody because he was a major force in the metal community, and he was one of the guys that, you know, of course, formed Slayer along with Kerry King, and he's one of the main songwriters, and I understand he won some Grammys. So, you know, this is a guy that he accomplished a lot, and I think the last thing I can say that's very fitting is his bandmate, Kerry King, I guess, on the Revolver Golden God Awards that was last week, I think, oddly enough, the same day he passed. You know, Kerry King said, you know, Jeff would not want a moment of silence. He was in, you know, F and Slayer. He'd want a moment of noise, and, you know, they raised their glasses and everybody cheered. So, you know, I'd be interesting to see what other details come out from this death, but, you know, this might teach people, you know, when you get bit by a spider, take it serious.
I guess, yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's the only thing I can really say. And again, my, you know, condolences go out to the family and his friends because, well, I, you know, I wasn't a huge fan. I appreciate what the band accomplished the last few years. You know, they've been on the Big Four tour with Metallica and Megadeth and Anthrax. And since his illness, the guy that was actually filling in for him, I think his name is Gary Holt. He's from the guitar player from Exodus. And so, you know, it'd be kind of interesting to see if the band continues, you know, plans to continue on or if they plan to replace him. So I guess, you know, in the coming month or so, we'll see what's up with that. And so is there anything you'd like to say regarding the passing of Jeff Hanneman, Jeff?
Pardon me?
I mean, like you told me you're not much of a fan, but have you heard anything else?
Well, I mean, I'm not really a big fan of Slayer. I mean, I do have a lot of respect for them. They were one of the first bands that started that kind of music, you know, that thrash, and, you know, you had bands like Speck in the 80s, you had bands like Slayer and Venom, Slayer, I was just never really into that kind of music. No, you know, I'm not knocking it or nothing on that in any way. So, and don't anybody think that that's what I'm doing.
No.
I was just never really into it. Slayer, like I told you in an email I sent you, I think the only song that I ever really heard from them that I'm familiar with is Raining Blood. You know, I mean, I actually like that song. And as far as like all the other members of Slayer, the only one that I'm the only member that I was ever familiar with, you know, was Kerry King. And when I went on Facebook the other day and I seen people saying Jeff Hanneman, that I'll be honest, I didn't even know who it was at first.
Yeah.
And then I started seeing, you know, people, you know, posting stuff about Slayer, and then I had asked my wife, because my wife knows more about them than I do, because she's into that kind of music. And she said that the guitar player for Slayer, you know, then I heard that he had gotten bitten by a spider a couple of years ago, and I guess what ultimately led to his death, from what I understand, is liver failure, I believe.
Yeah.
And so that's what caused his death. It's sad, you know. I mean, this, you know, a lot of bands that I grew up, that were around when I was younger, you know, back in the 80s, and, you know, you hear a lot of these guys dying and stuff like that, and it's sad, but I guess, you know, just like all things, you know, we all have to go sometime, you know, but usually when something sudden like that, you know, it hits people, you know in a big way, whereas opposed to, like Clive Burr, you know, a lot of people knew that he was sick for a long time, and multiple sclerosis is a pretty much a terminal illness.
Yeah.
It's just a matter of, but it takes a long time, you know, for it to kill you. You know, so I mean, I knew eventually that he was going to end up, you know, passing on, from that disease. But as with Jeff Hanneman, you know, it was sudden. This one day he was alive, and next day he was gone. You know, I always, you know, have somewhat of remorse, you know, when I hear of anybody, you know, in the music business, you know, passing on. So, but like I said, I've never been a big fan. Not because I think they're a bad band or anything like that. Because that's not at all the case. They're actually a great band. You know, I'm just not into that. I just don't particularly listen to or care for that kind of music.
I mean, I hear you. I mean, like I said, myself, I don't even own one Slayer album, but you know, I am a little more aware of the band, and I can tell you the difference to me is probably like you, Jeff. One thing is, you know, it was like Slayer, dude, and everybody into that band, they're all into really hardcore thrash, and like I have respect for bands like Megadeth and Metallica, because even some of their songs are a little more melodic. It's got melody to it, and it's not so brutal and in your face. That's again just you know, my cup of tea. But at the same time, you know, my heart goes out to this guy's family and his bandmates, because again, you know, like people initially they hear you know, he died of liver disease, they might automatically think, oh, you know, he is an alcoholic or whatever.
The first thing I thought was that drinking or something like that.
But yeah.
And then I found out that wasn't the case. It was from a spider bite.
And then you read,
well, that's weird.
Yeah, and then you read a spider bite, and the weird thing, it's not like he got bit by a spider 24 hours ago. You know, like I said, he'd been dealing with this the last couple of years, and it's like
ago.
2 years after the fact, you know, he's finally taken down. And so, you know, we're all sorry to hear that about that, and that's about all, you know, I have to say about that. And, you know, another interesting thing I was actually reading about the internet just before you called, you know, going back to like even how Dimebag Darrell died, you know, he was basically murdered on stage. I was reading a little bit about there was a Motley Crue concert a couple of nights ago, you know, just this weekend, I think, somewhere in Australia, and some crazy fan jumped up on stage and he knocked over Mick Mars, who's like 62 years old, and he's, you know, been suffering some serious bone disease for all these years, and I guess then he went after Vince Neil. It just makes you see that, you know, just getting on stage and performing, you know, you got people jumping off stage, you know, you could be risking your life just performing as a, you know, as a rock star, you know, or whatever.
There are a lot of crazy people out there, Jason.
Yeah.
There's a lot of nuts out there. I mean, I don't know what you could do to prevent, you know, someone from jumping up on the stage. Unless you're maybe put like a big cage around the stage or something like that. I don't know. It's just one of the this goes with the territory, I suppose. You know, you have to, because I mean, you know, there's so many people there. You know, you don't really know, who's going to do what. You know, so I mean, you just like in Dimebag Darrell. I mean, that when I heard about that, I was like, whoa, because that actually happened right here in Columbus where I live. And as a matter of fact, my wife was actually at the show when it happened. She actually seen it happen.
Oh wow!
And she went to see a Damage Plan, and she was actually there. She talked about it many times. You know, told me about it and stuff, and yeah, she was right there. She seen it happen. She said that everybody thought that it was part of the show, but obviously it wasn't, because he shot and killed him.
Well, thank God.
I mean,
thank God she didn't get injured. But you know, I'm sure that's something that stayed with her. You know, even just as a fan, seeing one of your heroes get, you know, basically murdered on stage, that must have been quite a thing to see or remember.
Yeah.
And okay, now I'd like to change the shift of the show a little now, Jeff. And, you know, one thing I emailed you about was this thing called the Steven Tyler Act. And I guess in early at the beginning of the year, I guess Steven Tyler apparently had a private party at his own house somewhere. I guess he has property in Hawaii. And some photographer, you know, took a, you know, somehow got on the property, took an unwanted shot of him in a Speedo or something. I think I sent you a photo. I don't know if you had a chance to...
Yes,
see that.
Seen that picture. Yeah.
And so basically they're trying to, along with, I think, Mick Fleetwood and some other celebrities, trying to get like a law passed, and they're going to call it the Steven Tyler Act, preventing people from, you know, sneaking on to celebrities' properties and taking private photos and posting that. And, you know, before we talk about it any further, what are your thoughts on that? You know, you think there should be, you know, laws against people taking, you know, photos on their private property and private events and stuff?
Well, my view on it is this, you know, you're a famous person, you're a celebrity, regardless of whatever you do, whether you're an actor or a musician or a sports figure or whatever, you're in the public eye, you know, and the paparazzi, I mean, that's how they make a living. I mean, is it right or is it, no, it's not right. But I don't know. I mean, I don't, for them to pass a law, for them, I mean, people are doing, it's like anything. I believe they'd still find a way to do it, you know? And they're always out there. They're trying to get you, especially, you know, catch celebrities in some type of, an act of some kind of that would degrade them in some way, you know, because those are, I guess, you know, are the photos that are worth the most money, you know, to tabloid magazines and stuff like that. But I mean, I don't think it's right that they do that. And quite honestly, there should be some kind of a law. There should be some kind of boundaries. You know what I mean? Some kind of boundaries. Because some of them, it's just, you know, they step over the line too much, you know. And I mean, everybody has a right to their privacy. But then on the other hand, you know, you're a celebrity. You're in the public eye. You're on television. You're in the movies or whatnot. You know, people love this kind of stuff. You know, they love to see stuff like that. Why? I don't know. Personally, I couldn't care less. You know, it doesn't. You know, I don't really care about it. But you know, some people, that's what they live for, stuff like that, drama and just, you know, just anything, it's open to talk about, I guess. But yeah, I think there should be some kind of a law to limit them to what they can do, because to totally eliminate them from the scene altogether, I don't see that ever happening. You know, that won't ever happen. But there should be some kind of a, like I said, some kind of boundaries that should be set, you know, by the law. So I guess we'll just have to see how that goes.
Yeah, and I think the mistake they made with this, trying to get this Steven Tyler bill passed, is they were doing it, you know, in Hawaii. And I think, you know, having laws like that from state to state, you know, that's, they want to really be taken seriously. They need to make some kind of, like, national law, you know, across the whole country, or even worldwide. I don't know how you'd go about doing that, but you know, again, the thing is, there's, you know, like, he was having a private party at this house, and I don't think he invited the photographer. Now, like, if he had showed up at an award ceremony dressed like that, okay, like you said, he's a celebrity, okay, if you're gonna show up in public like that, you know, expect to have, you know, have your picture posted everywhere. But you know, this was
the picture that I seen of him, he was in like a bathing suit or something.
Yeah.
But I mean, we think back to last year on American Idol. I think I think I was home that day, and I was actually watching it. And Steven Tyler stripped down to everything, and he had a pair of like a leopard print bikini type, like a bathing suit.
Wow.
There was a swimming pool there, and he jumped in the pool. So I mean, what difference does it make? I mean, if you took a picture, I mean, basically wearing the same thing in this picture, and he did it on national television, you know, last year on American Idol. So I mean, I really don't know why, what the big deal is. You know?
Yeah, I don't know if he's making such a big deal about it. Like I said, except maybe he feels that the thing that was on American Idol, he had some control over. He was able to decide what got shown. I don't know what the difference, but. So the only thing gets me about this, like, if you go back and read the article I emailed you later, like, some of the representatives, they were, like, not even trying to get it passed. They're like, there's zero support for this. We're concerned about First Amendment rights. However, if you go back to, like, when Princess Diana was killed, that everybody was outraged that, oh, it was the paparazzi that killed her. We need new laws to go after these people. And again, I'm not saying that, you know, that paparazzi, that their intent was to kill Princess Diana, but I'm just saying, if you go back, and because it was Princess Diana and she got killed, people were outraged. Again, I think some of these representatives, they didn't take this serious because, oh, Steven Tyler, he's a goofy rock star. You know, who cares about what he thinks? But yet again, when a lot of these politicians get caught with their pants down and stuff, and they get caught having affairs and they're married, it's like, this is a private moment. We respect the media. We ask the media to, you know, respect our privacy. You know, that's the only thing that kind of made me take, you know, notice of this.
Well, I mean, if somebody, you know, if someone's life is in jeopardy, like in the case of Princess Diana, where, you know, she got killed,
yeah,
you know, because of due to paparazzi, you know, I mean, that's unacceptable, you know, and stuff like that's where, you know, there should be some kind of boundaries, you know, whether or not they'll follow them is left to be seen, you know, but there should be something. What happened with Princess Diana was a tragedy, you know. And but as far as like politicians and stuff like that, I mean, the public lives for that kind of stuff. You know, they want to see that stuff, you know. And I suspect, you know, it's not like, I mean, we're all human. We all do this kind of stuff. People do goofy things, you know. Unfortunately, when you're in the public eye, you're doing goofy things, you know, you gotta watch where you're doing your goofy things, because there might be someone there with a camera to take a picture of you. So it kind of goes both ways, you know. If it's all part of being, you know, being a celebrity. You know, they're always the public's eye are on you. You know, they're watching because you're famous. You know.
Yeah, you know, and then even looking at the internet and stuff, you know. Like a lot of times when I interview bands and musicians, you know, they tell me, oh, you know, you can use any of the photos up on my Facebook page. Feel free to do so. So, you know, I think it's one thing, like, too, even on people's personal Facebook pages, if they're posting stuff up there, photos of themselves, you know, that's kind of them saying, you know, this is my permission. You guys want to view these photos? They're putting those photos out there to the world. But, you know, at the same time, if somebody breaks in like some celebrity's house and they steal their private photos or whatever and they put them out there, you know, again, that's a totally different thing. I think it, you know, should
yeah,
be, you know, taken by
that's
case
going
by case.
Over the top.
Yeah.
You know, that's going over the top. That's breaking into someone's house and taking, you know, looking for stuff like that. Yeah, stuff like that is unacceptable and uncalled for.
Okay. And that's pretty much all I want to say on that matter. And then another thing I seen you talking about today on Facebook page, which I got actually a press release that Steven Adler's publicist sent me the other day, saying that the, you know, tour has been canceled because he's back in rehab. Which I like kind of what you were saying today, Jeff. I think it's a really shame because this is a guy that he's really been struggling, you know, all his life with drugs, and he finally. You know, he's got a new band called Adler, and they put out a great debut album. And, you know, this guy, you know, he's really got a great second chance. You know, you can't say anybody didn't give him a second chance. He's got a great band and everything. And so I really hope that he's able to, you know, clean himself up this time, you know.
Yeah, well, when I seen that, you know, I can't remember exactly what it was, but he had a stroke. You know, because of his cocaine addiction.
He couldn't even talk for a few years.
I remember seeing an interview with him some years ago where he could hardly even talk, you know, and he's recovered from that completely, where he can actually play, you know, play the drums again and stuff like that. And now he's out doing the same stuff he used to do before. I mean, I don't really know. I didn't read the whole article.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly what he was doing. But, I mean, I wrote on my Facebook page, you know, you'd think that he would have learned. But, you know, I never learned. It took me years. I mean, I've had terrible, awful things. I never had a stroke, but I've nearly died.
Wow.
You know, on more than one occasion. You know, due to overconsumption of alcohol and mind-altering substances, you know. And like I said, you know, the disease of addiction is cunning, baffling, and powerful. You know, I just, you know, I guess, you know, I'll keep him in my prayers. I hope he can get it right. You know, I don't know. I don't think I read that the tour was canceled. I think it was postponed.
Postponed. I guess they were supposed to
tour in a rehab.
Yeah.
But I mean, when you go to rehab, you know, you take what you learn there, and once you leave that place, you incorporate that into your life, and you have to do it. You have to really want to do it, you know, and you have to do it one day at a time. You know, and that's the only way. I mean, it was the only way that I was able to, you know, overcome that stuff, you know. And it's also a thing that, you know, I mean, a person can recover from, you know, being addicted to drugs and alcohol or whatever it is, but that part of it you can recover from. It's all the other stuff that goes along with it, you know, and you have to keep your guard up, you know, and I can relate to him because I know how easy it is to fall back into it, you know. It's not hard at all, you know, so I mean, especially living that kind of lifestyle, being out on the road, and, you know, the stuff, and I'm sure it's there, you know, and you have to keep your guard up against it, you know, because it's just really easy to fall back into it, because like I said, you know, this disease takes more lives than it saves lives, and lives are saved, and that's unfortunate, but it's a statistic, and it's a fact, you know. And I hate, you know, whenever I hear of anybody passing away or dying because, you know, of an overdose, or because they drank themselves to death, or their liver failed due to, you know, consumption of alcohol and stuff like that. It's a painful, long, long, painful death, unless you overdose and just die right there, you know. Otherwise, it's a long, painful death. I hate to see something like that happen to Stephen Adler or anybody. You know, so when I read that about him, I was like, oh man, you know, what the heck, you know, like the guy had a stroke. I mean, that should tell you something right there. But then again, like I said, it's cunning, baffling, and powerful, and there's really no explanation for it. It just things like that happen.
And I guess, you know, at least he was, you gotta respect the fact he was smart enough to, you know, check himself back into rehab. So, you know, I credit him with that. But like you said, yeah, you know, he suffered a stroke, and I know, like you said, for a long time he wasn't even able to talk, you know, so he's come a long way, and let's hope he, you know, comes out the other end. But I just wanted to note that I actually had the opportunity to interview some of the guys from his band, the lead singer and the guitar player, and they were telling me, you know, they were saying, we're really, none of us in the band do drugs. We really support, you know, Steven's sobriety so much to the point that when we go out together, we don't even, because we know of his addictions, we don't even, drink a glass of beer in front of him. We don't do any of that, you know, because we don't want to, you know, put the temptation out there. So, I got to say, at least, you know, his bandmates are behind him, and at least they, trying to do what they can. So, I want to put that out there because, you know, I think that'll help him. And, right now, all we can do is, hope that he comes out, you know, better after he gets out of rehab. But talking a little bit about rehab, you know, kind of makes you see, like, somebody like Lindsay Lohan. I was just hearing on the radio the other day that she's in the rehab for the millionth time or whatever it is, and she left rehab because she wanted to go to rehab where she could smoke or whatever, and, you know, the crazy court allowed it, and I'm like, you know, the court wonders why this girl is still as messed up as she is, you know, because, you know, they haven't really come down on her, and so, you know, who knows how that's going to turn out.
You know, and it's like a lot of people, you know, when they just don't want to stop, you know, she don't want to stop, and she's not ready, she doesn't want to stop, and she can say whatever she wants. I don't believe a word she says, you know. You can tell just by the, you know, she was on, I believe it was David Letterman or something a few weeks back, and they had a clip of it on the morning news, and I was like, oh, please. You know, she, sometimes, you know, some people, such, you know, you have to hit your bottom. You know, this girl has not hit her bottom. I mean, she's been slapped on the wrist, and they, you know, she wants to party. She's a party girl, and that's what she wants to do. You know, but the law don't want her doing it, but she still wants to do it. Quite honestly, personally, I think that a nice little little stint in jail might open her eyes, you know, not for 5 hours, maybe like for 3 or 4 months.
Yeah.
You know, because the disease of alcoholism and drug addiction leads to three things. It leads to jails, institutions, or death. You know, and that's what it will lead to. You know, put her in. If she breaks the law, then do to her what you would do to anybody else. Lock them up. You know, get them off the street before she kills somebody or something. You know, put her in a rehab. Yeah, but a person can be put into rehab and put into rehab over and over and over again by the courts and keep coming out and keep doing the same thing over and over again because they're just not ready. They're not ready to stop. Some of them never get ready. Some of them die.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just the way that it is. And you know, for a person to go into rehab, they have to want it. You got to really want it and be willing to go to any length to get it, and go to any length to maintain it and live it. You know, you can't just. Of course, they throw people in the rehab. Now, I'm not saying that doesn't never work. Because I know people that it has worked on in my personal life, you know, where they had so many DUIs, they've been arrested so many times, you know, they ended up having to go to jail, and from jail then they went to a treatment center, and they just decided that they had enough, and they got sober and stayed sober and have been that way for multiple years, you know. But someone like Lindsay Lohan, I honestly get tired of hearing about her. It's like I feel like just lock her up already and just be done with it. You know, just let her stay there and see what, you know. See, this is what it leads you to. You know.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And you know, with Lindsay Lohan, the thing is, it's almost like she's more famous now for her infamy, for, you know,
yeah,
than for any of her movies.
She's more known now for her breaking the law. Than she is for any of her acting or movies or anything like that. You think of Lindsay Lohan, the first thing you think about is, you know, someone that is someone that's in trouble with the law all the time. You know.
Okay, people, you've been listening to Rock Talk, and I'm Jason J. Rock Houston, and we've been talking with Jeff DeBerry. And you know, Jeff, I could talk all day to you, and you know, just one more thing on Lindsay Lohan we were talking about. I think you're right that she hasn't hit rock bottom for a simple fact that you know, the most she's gotten is 30 days in jail, and it's almost like every time she gets in trouble, she laughs about it. I think in order for her rock bottom, as they say, she's gonna have to get some, you know, a couple months in jail at least, I think, to teach her a lesson. I think talking about, you know, drug addiction too, I think the saddest case in recent memory is to me Janie Lane. I mean, he's a guy that very talented singer and songwriter, and you know, over the years his band wasn't as popular as they once were, but super talented guy, and he suffered from depression, and he was a, you know, I mean, if you look at the way he died alone, and you know, in some seedy little motel room, you know, with the bottle of, you know, it's so it's almost, you know, so typical, alone in a motel room with a bottle of pills and, you know, vodka bottle on his, you know, nightstand. You know, that's just the saddest case I can, you know, remember in recent years.
So just, it was almost like the song from Bad Company.
Shooting Star, yeah. Shooting Star.
Yeah, Janie Lane. I mean, Janie Lane was the same age as I am. He was the exact same age as me. And you know, I was quite a fan of Ward. I liked their song. I've actually seen Ward with Janie Lane. It wasn't back in the 80s. It was like in, I think, like 2003. And when I seen him that time, I mean, he was like, he had lost all the weight, but when I seen him, he was like really overweight. I mean, he weighed probably every bit of 250, 280 pounds. I mean, he was huge, you know. And then he was on stage there, you know, drinking a beer, smoking a cigarette, you know, just that's what it, you know, leads to. You know, he'd lost all the weight, and he started looking a little more like himself. But I mean, you can see it in his eyes and his face, the toll that it took on him, you know, because that stuff will age you, you know. I mean, if you keep doing it, I mean, you will look old. And when I heard about him passing, I actually cried because I was a fan of his. He was a great talent. He had a great voice, great songwriter, you know. But he's just another one that disease got the best of him, you know. I mean, I think he tried to clean up before. I don't recall for sure, but I think he did. But it's just like I said, it's cunning, baffling, and powerful. And at least the three things: jails, institutions, and death. And Janie Wayne paid the ultimate price.
Yeah, and you know, like you said, you know, I remember when I first heard about his death, because like you, I was a fan of his for several years, and you know, I still like. I'm not ashamed to admit that, you know, I still listen to his music and still thought he was just a super talented singer and songwriter. And you know, interesting enough, like yourself, Jeff, he started out on the drums, and then he later became a singer. And it really hit me, you know, his death really hard when I first heard about it. And although when I heard he died, I wasn't totally shocked, but I thought, wow, you know, finally it happened, you know. This is a guy can be saved, you know, and
I was very shocked. I couldn't believe it. I was like, oh, Janie Wayne's dead. I couldn't believe it. It was hard to believe.
Yeah, and it's been a couple of years now, and it's still hard to believe, you know. And we were talking about Slayer guitarist Jeff Hanneman. You know, he kind of died, interestingly, you know, of a spider bite. And I recently, just this last week, I bought the book by. Stephen Pearcy, he's a lead singer, of course, from Rat. And they had a guitar player, Robin Crosby, who was one of the main songwriters. And he died in June of 2002, of course, from... he died of AIDS, but he got his AIDS, of course, from sticking himself with a needle, an infected needle. And you know, he died a slow, painful death in the sense that a lot of people that die of AIDS, they get really skinny. It cost him to gain like four. He became like 400 pounds, real huge, and you know, it changed his image drastically. It got to a point where he was unable to play, and it was his stemmed from like a heroin addiction too. But what was interesting in reading Stephen's book is he talks a lot about his friend Robin. You know, his bandmate. They were like best friends, and they formed a band together, and they wrote a lot of his songs. Together, he talks about how he was affected by, you know, his friend's passing, and yet he also talks in the book openly and honestly, even after his friend passed from, you know, got sick from his heroin addiction and ultimately, you know, died, he got addicted to heroin, and he told me, I was never as heavily into it as Robin was, but at the same time, he goes, first time I did heroin, I knew why he did it, you know, for that feeling. He said it was like my lover, it was the best feeling I had. But it also, you know, it caused me to get depressed and stuff. But he says, at least unlike my friend, I was able to, you know, kick the addiction. So I kind of thought that's another interesting story in that you see your best friend die, you know, from heroin, and then you yourself get addicted to it.
Well, heroin is a nasty thing. I mean, I know when I was in treatment, you know, there were a lot of people in there that were addicted to heroin. There was actually more heroin addicts in there than whether it were alcoholics or anything else. You know, and one guy had come in, and I never seen anything like it before. I've never really known people that really did that stuff. You know, this guy was he was actually a musician too. He was a guitar player, and he was just a little younger than me, but I mean, the guy's sitting there shaking, I've never seen anything like it. It's something that I would never want to go through, you know. And coming off the stuff is really, really, it's bad. It's real bad, you know. And it can kill you, you know. Just like, I mean, you take too much of it, you could OD and die. There have been so many. You know, like Janis Joplin and stuff. I mean, died of a heroin overdose. You know, there's been, you know, so many. You know, that stuff is bad news.
Yeah, I don't know what else to say, but yeah, and, to change the mood a little on a happier note, I'd like to talk a little bit about. I recently purchased a debut solo album from Tom Keefer, who, of course, if anybody knows, he's the lead singer, guitar player, and keyboard player from Cinderella. and it's been a long time in the making. You know, the last Cinderella album came out almost 20 years ago, and this first thing he's done outside of Cinderella since then. And I think I just strongly suggest people go out and pick it up because it's, of course, got that classic Cinderella sound, but then he's got elements of, because he's recently moved to Nashville the last couple of years, and so there's elements of country music and, you know, everything in between. So, and then his wife does a lot of co-songwriting, and she sings the backup, so it's kind of a different sound, but if you're a Cinderella fan, you'll dig it. Is there anything new you've been listening to these days, Jeff?
I'm sorry, Jason. What was the question?
Well, I was saying that I just got the new solo album.
I heard that.
I was asking, have you been listening to any new music or any music in general that you'd like to let our listeners know about?
Not really. No, I mean, honestly, Jason, I mean, when it comes to listening to music, I pretty much listen to the stuff I've always listened to. And really, I mean, honestly, I don't really listen. I mean, you might find it hard to believe, but I really don't listen to a whole lot of music. I listen, I like writing songs and recording my own stuff. And when I was younger, I was listening to music all the time, you know, every day. But I mean, every now and then, you know, I might go on YouTube or something and look for certain videos. Like last night, I was listening to some. I was looking at some old hours, some REO Speedwagon. I was watching some videos of them from I think it was like 2010. And I admiring how good they still are, you know. And but I mean, for me, I'm just old school, you know. There's not really a whole lot of new bands out there that really capture my attention in any way. You know, I do listen to some indie music from time to time. I couldn't really tell you any bands off the top of my head. You know, there's a lot of good talent out there, you know, as far as independent musicians and bands go. But as far as like mainstream music, there's really nothing out there that even catches my attention. You know, it's always old school, the old stuff. You know, I'm listening to Kiss, and I am quite a big fan of Rat. I always like Rat. I seen them back in '83. I like listening to Ozzy and Dio, and it depends on what I'm in the mood for, and I have to be in the mood to listen to it.
Yeah, I'm like you. I hear where you're coming from. I'm not all that much into new music, but from time to time I do catch a great new bands. But like this Tom Kiefer album, I caught it because I'm a Cinderella fan, of course. And like I said, they haven't put out an album in 20 years, and part of that is because they got signed to like Sony Music like back in 2000, and they were going to release a new album, but for some reason. It ended up being a really awful record deal where the record company ended up shelving the album. And since then, they have not really been, for whatever reason, able to put out a album. So he decided he was going to put out a solo album. First thing he's done in 20 years, I wanted to check it out. And I'm glad I did. And then, of course, Anthrax, they recently put out like a 4-song EP that a lot of bands are doing. But, you know, they had this was an all-cover album. And so I thought, okay, it'd be interesting to check out. And I like some of the, I like most of the stuff on there. The only complaint I have is I wish it would have been, you know, a little more songs. But other than that, that's worth checking out, you know. And like you were saying, I'm a huge Rat fan, and you know, the interesting thing about Rat is last album they put out, it was a huge comeback album, sold pretty well. But then you know, a lot of those guys they don't get along too well, so. You know, from time to time, we know if the band's together. I understand they're working on a new album, so you know we'll see. So that's what I've been doing.
I'm really glad that Steve and Percy got back together with Rat, you know, because I was actually at the same show that I seen Warrant at. It was in upstate New York, and it was a show. It was L.A. Guns, Firehouse, Warrant, Rat, and I believe Dokken, and Warrant, they were pretty much all the original members, Jenny Lane, and then Rat came out, and the only two members At the time, they were in Rat with Bobby Blotzer and Warren DeMartinis. And they had this singer, I don't know who he was, but he was just awful. He was terrible, just this little, this short little guy. I mean, it wasn't the same thing, you know what I mean? I mean, Stephen Percy is the voice of Rat, you know, and you know, just like a lot of bands, you know, it's hard to replace a lead vocalist, you know. You know, Journey is another one, you know, that they got this guy. He sounds a lot like Steve Perry, but it's not Steve Perry. You know, it's not the original guy. You know, when I seen Rat that time, I actually walked away. And that's it. They were just awful. I mean, they sounded great. I mean, Warren DeMartinis, he was really good because he's a great guitar player. Bobby Blotzer, you know, a good drummer. But I mean, the rest of the band, I mean, I don't know who the dude was playing the bass. And they had some other guy playing guitar. We had like these really long dreadlocks and about 5 million tattoos all over his body. And I just said, like, this is not Rat. It's the same band that I seen back in the 80s. You know, and it wasn't. I think I walked over and got me something to drink, and it was just like mingling around while walking around the crowd and stuff. It wasn't at all. You know, I mean, I didn't like it at all. It was terrible.
Yeah, I mean,
but that's why I'm glad Steve got back together with that band.
Yeah, and just to educate you a little on that, the guy they had singing back then, his name was Jizzy Pearl. And if you ever heard of a band Love Hate, that he used to be in that front of that band, and then he was also in.
I've heard of him before. Yes, I've heard of him.
And then he was also in L.A. Guns for a while. And then oddly enough, the guitar player they had, the guy with the dreadlocks, that was John Corabi, who, interestingly enough, he's known mostly for being a lead singer. He's a guy that, of course, replaced Vince Neil and Motley Crue. And I was
okay. Yeah, I know. I didn't recognize him. I didn't recognize him at all. I was just so not into it.
And I thought.
I mean, I was a big fan of Rat, you know. And when I seen that, I mean, if it were me, it wouldn't even be worth. I don't know. It was awful.
Yeah, and to me, you know, they would have been better off if they were gonna try to replace Steven to, you know, have Karabi up in front. So, you know, I don't know what the deal with that was. You know, but yeah, I'm glad like you with Steven's back. He's the voice of that band, and if you're at all a Rat fan, I really strongly suggest you go out and you know, at least check out his book, because it's got a lot of interesting stories. It explains a lot, like he's saying part of the reason him and the drummer never got along is that the drummer was never, you know, a main songwriter, so he didn't get a lot of the money that the other guys did for the writing. So, you know, it answered a lot of my questions, and so that's another thing I suggest people go out and get. And I say in an email also, Jeff, about guitar player John Five, you know, in early February, I guess his house in Los Angeles was robbed, and he put up a little notice on Facebook telling people, this is what I had stolen from my house. If anybody knows, even down to the serial numbers of the guitars and things he had stolen. You know, what do you think about you know, celebrities going on Facebook and posting stuff like that and offering up rewards for, you know, to get their stuff back?
Well, it's a good idea, actually. I mean, if the guy I was reading a little bit of it, and then all the stuff stolen. I mean, whether we'll ever get it back or not, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Facebook can be. I mean, it's just a public internet social whatever
network. Yeah.
I mean, there's millions of people on there, so I mean, I don't know how many people he has on his page, but I mean, if somebody's seen it, you know, that's a good idea. I think if I had something stolen, I mean, I almost want probably consume that if I were trying to get it back. You know, because if there were some honest people out there, you know, that claim to be your friend and they do see the stuff, I mean, if I seen the stuff, I don't know the guy, but I would definitely let them know, hey, dude, I've seen your guitar, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, so I can't wait to see if you get some of the stuff back, but, you know, he's another guy that I really suggest that you go and check out. If you're telling me you're not too aware of who he is, he, of course, like I told you, he's played with David Lee Roth, Rob Halford, Marilyn Manson.
Okay.
He's now with Rob Zombie. He's a very diverse player. He's also played with like K.D. Lang, and he's written songs with Meat Loaf and Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Scorpions. So he's done quite a bit, and he puts out his own solo guitar type albums, and very talented guy. And also wanted to congratulate John and just winning. He was named best guitarist of the year, I guess, by Revolver Golden Gods. So congratulations to him on that. And you've been listening to Rock Talk again, and I'm Jason J. Rock Houston, and talking with my co-host Jeff DeBerry. And once again, Jeff, the last thing I want to talk a little bit about before we go is and wrap up is you were earlier talking a little bit about the Boston Marathon, and I understand you're kind of writing a song about that. What were your initial thoughts when you first heard about the bombing?
Well, I thought it was awful.
Yeah.
I was actually sitting down here in my studio where I'm at right now, and my wife she was upstairs in the bedroom, she came running down, and when she first saw it, I thought she was going to say that North Korea had bombed South Korea or something. And then she said that there was a bombing at the Boston Marathon. Well, I've said this, before, and I'm going to try to be very as brief about it as I can. There's the only thing that I believe to be true as to what happened in Boston is that two bombs went off, three people were killed, and over 200 people were injured and maimed, some of them, permanently. As far as what the government says, what the media says, just the way that the entire thing unfolded with them capturing this guy, the other guy getting killed, and it just doesn't sit right with me. And I don't know exactly what happened or why it happened or if the person that they had was really the person that did it. I don't know. And all I do know is that our government hides a lot of stuff from us. I believe anything they say. And as far as the media goes, the media is just like a circus. When something like that happens, it's just constantly like beating a dead horse. My heart and thoughts and prayers go out to the people, the victims, the families, and whatnot. As far as everything else, this guy that they have in jail and all that stuff, I wasn't there. So I don't know I don't know anything about any of that stuff, I'm gonna stick to that, and it's just being like I said, there are two bombs went off, three people were killed, and over 200 people were injured, and it was an awful, terrible tragedy, and there's been a lot of awful, terrible tragedies happening lately, in the past 10 years, the shootings, September 11th. This thing in Boston, and it's just why I wrote this song called The Candle. It's not a song about any one particular tragedy. It's not a song about what happened. It's a song that's dedicated to the people that were killed and lives that were affected. That's what the song is about. And I hope that I'm actually going to try to finish it up this evening, and hope to have it posted pretty soon.
Okay, now, final thing I'll say on the matter is, my initial thoughts, the day it happened, I was coming out of work, I get in the car coming home, and I turn on the radio and I hear about this, and I'm like, wait a minute, what did I just hear? Bombing and, what Boston? And immediate thing I thought is terrorist attack, before any of the details start coming out, okay, there's another terrorist attack. And, of course, as the days went on and we started learning more and more, it kind of also made me realize, okay, you got groups, like Al Qaeda and all these terrorist groups, but then, it's other crazy people out there, and it's not just terrorists. It's to think that just these two idiot brothers could get together and, even though it's not as major, say 2011, it's still pretty serious. And think that even if we believe what we were being told, and that it's these two idiot brothers that did it all, and some of their friends, that's a pretty scary thing to think that two idiots. Can cause all that damage, and like you said, luckily we don't have as many deaths as we did, like on 2000 you know, September 11th. But that also makes you think you don't need to die.
It is an act of terrorism. I mean, regardless of who did it, or for whatever reason, I mean, something like that is like an act of terrorism, as far as I'm concerned. Whether it was someone that did, just like the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, Timothy McVeigh, you know, I mean, he was from here, you know, it was an act of terrorism. Anything like that, you know, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, all the details behind it and just everything, it was almost like I don't know. I was shocked, it broke my heart to see something like that happen.
I mean, I guess what I'm saying is it shows you that, like you said, it is an act of terrorism, but you know, like for example, since 9/11, a lot of people when they think of the face of terrorists, they think of, you know, Iran, they think of Arabs, but this shows you that you don't need a whole terror organization behind you. You could have two idiots planning this, and although they didn't kill as many people, like you said, a lot of people's lives have been affected. Because I read stories, I've heard news reports on the TV about people that they had their legs blown off, they had their arms blown off. There's an 8-year-old boy; he was one of the victims that died. You know, so people are affected by this, even though it may not be as on a major scale as say 9/11, but it is still a pretty big. Event, obviously.
Well, yep, it sure was. It was awful. Terrorism. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the, you know, the war on drugs. It's a war and a fight that just can't be won. You know, because you can take down one person and someone else is going to step right up. You know, and as far as like, I knew right away that it wasn't someone like Al Qaeda or something like that, because those people would have claimed responsibility immediately, you know, just like they did, you know, in 9/11 and stuff. You know, they'd have been dancing in the streets, burning American flags and everything else. You know, so that's why I knew straight up the bat it wasn't anything like that. You know, where these guys came from. I don't know what it's all going to lead to, but I don't. And in my opinion, I don't think it's over yet. You know, just that's far from being over.
Yeah, I mean, to me, you know, the interesting thing is too, you know, people that come out in favor of these, you know, even the guys that are being accused of doing it, like, the one brother got killed, the police are wrong for shooting. Well, you know, I'm sorry, but you know, if these guys are really the ones that set these bombs off, you know, you go and you put all these other people's lives in danger, then I'm not saying you deserve to get shot, but at the same time, you're putting your life at risk. You know, if you're going to do something stupid like that, don't be surprised when you get shot. And I just don't understand people, you know, that they have sympathy for these guys that have, you know, been arrested, and the one brother that was killed, you know, have sympathy for the people who got their legs blown off, for the 8-year-old boy who got killed and his family, you know?
Yeah. Honestly, you know, that Friday when they caught the guy, and when all this chain of events unfolded, I mean, I believe that, you know, like I said, is this, the bombs went off, people were killed, people were injured. That whole day, I even said to my wife, I said the chain of events that unfolded was almost like a movie. You know, I mean, you know, they rob a convenience store, then they carjack somebody. They get caught in a shootout with the cops. You know, the one cop has the guy on the ground and rolls out of the way right before he gets run over by a car. The car disappears down a dark road. You know, they have the whole National Guard out. They bring out. I mean, everything short of claiming martial law. I mean, they're going through people's houses without warrants and stuff like that. That's, you know, it's just, to me, Jason, there's something going on that no one's saying. They're not going to say, because they only tell us what we want, what they want us to know, and they tell us what we want to hear. You know, so as far as, you know, the real reason, what really happened, I mean, I don't know. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, we'll never know. You know, we're never going to know. Maybe someday we will. I don't know, but it may be something we don't like. You know, and when I see stuff like that, it was to me the whole thing. And then all of a sudden they're getting ready to, you know, they're getting ready to give up the search, and some guy comes out in his backyard and sees blood on his boat, and there's this guy lying in there, and they're sending robots in and helicopters with X-ray vision and all this stuff, and And to me, it was like a movie. You know, it was like someone had scripted it out like a movie. You know, and it really angers me. It angers me so much. You know, because I'm not gonna really get into it any further than that. All I'm gonna say is that I'm not stupid, and I see things for what they are, and I can read between the lines, and I can see stuff that other people don't, or maybe that other people don't want to see or don't want to believe. You know, my heart goes out to the people that were injured and killed, and it was awful. But as far as the way the media handled it and stuff like that, I mean, it was just, I ended up having to turn it off because I just couldn't watch it anymore.
It was
too much.
The last thing I'll say on the matter is, you know, the only thing I really question is, like you're saying, you know, at first they had no idea who did it, and then the way they supposedly caught these guys was, because, you know, like a lot of major cities, I guess, Boston has video cameras all over the place. But, you know, first thing I thought was, okay, I would think, you know, to be able to pinpoint the guys that, you know, catch them on camera, first of all, you'd have to go through hours and hours and hours of video. I don't believe you'd just be able to put on the, you know, first video and that's the guy, you know. And I kind of question that. So, and if they did have some kind of video, I don't understand why they wouldn't release it to the press. Okay, this is a video that helped us, you know, catch these guys. I don't know why they were being so secretive about that. But that's the only thing I kind of question is, early on they had no idea, and all of a sudden, oh, okay, well, you know, we all had all this video footage. We were finally able to go through it. I think it would have taken you know, a little longer. That's my only question.
Exactly. Well, that's about all I got to say on that matter.
Okay, well, once again, this has been Rock Talk you guys have been listening to, and I'm Jason J. Rock Houston. We've been talking with Jeff DeBerry. It's been great talking with you, Jeff. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the listeners before we wrap up?
Not really. Just thanks for listening. For all you out there, all of you out there who are listening, appreciate it. You can my music, if you're interested in listening to my music, you can find me on Facebook. Just type me in there, Jeff DeBerry, DeBury. I'll pop up. I am currently working on I have finished one song that I posted. That's called Bite the Bullet, and it's a real hard rocking kind of metal tune. And that is going to be on my the album that I'm currently working on. It may very well even be the title track to the album, I'm not sure. And also to watch for this new song that I'm working on called The Candle. Hopefully we'll have that finished soon, and I will post that just as I do all my other stuff. I don't know when the album will be finished. I'm kind of shooting for maybe the end of summer, sometime in the fall. But it does take me a while to do all this stuff, because since I do all the instruments myself, it's very time consuming. That's about it.
And so let me ask you, Jeff, have you actually got other songs that are already written that you're just kind of waiting to record?
I have ideas for a lot of songs, but as far as having anything, all I have is what I have right now. And my phone's about to die, Jason.
Okay, well, I'll talk to you, Jeff, next time. Take care, and thanks for taking time to do this. I really appreciate it. Bye-bye.
Okay, Jason, thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Grip Talk on GripManiaRadio.com. If you're interested in being featured in one of our shows, please visit the appropriate section of our website. Until next time, keep on rocking and banging that head.